TNT with your worldwide news update. Azerbaijan Airlines said Friday preliminary results showed one of its planes, which crashed in Kazakhstan that killed 38 people and left all 29 survivors injured on Wednesday, experienced, quote, external physical and technical interference, unquote. I thought the plane was going to fall apart, Subankar Rakhimov, one of the passengers, told Reuters from hospital, adding that he had begun to recite prayers and prepare for the end after hearing one loud bang as it approached its original destination, Grozny, in southern Russia. Azerbaijan Airlines suspended a host of flights to Russian cities Friday. Asked about reports Russian air defenses had mistakenly shot down the aircraft, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said on Friday he had nothing to add and did not want to give any assessments until the official investigation reached its conclusions. South Korea's parliament impeached acting President Han Duck-soo Friday following his decision not to appoint three justices to the Constitutional Court bench, which is currently reviewing President Yoon Suk-yeol's impeachment case. The impeachment of Prime Minister Han, who has been acting president since Yoon himself was impeached December 14th for declaring martial law December 3rd, has thrown South Korea into uncharted territory. I declare that the impeachment motion of Prime Minister Han Duck-soo was passed with 192 votes out of 192 votes cast. The motion, led by opposition parties, passed with 192 of 300 votes amid rowdy scenes by ruling People Power Party members who surrounded the speaker's podium while chanting that the vote was invalid and that parliament had committed tyranny. South Korea's new acting president is now Choi Sung-mok, who is also the finance minister. Germany is headed for a national election 7 months early. President Frank-Walter Steinmeier ordered the parliament dissolved and set new elections for February 23rd. Steinmeier made his decision after Chancellor Olaf Scholz's governing coalition collapsed. This is VOA News. U.S. officials say they asked for and got the retraction of an independent monitor's warning of imminent famine in North Gaza. AP correspondent Charles De La Desma reports.
The Famine System Network issued a warning this week. The new report had warned that starvation deaths in North Gaza could reach famine levels as soon as next month. It cited what it called Israel's near-total blockade of food and water. The U.S. ambassador to Israel, Jacob Lowe, criticized the finding as inaccurate and irresponsible. The U.S. Agency for International Development, which funds the famine monitoring report, told the AP Lowe had asked for and gotten the report's retraction. USAID officials have told the AP that it had asked the group for greater review of discrepancies in some of the data. I'm Charles De La Desma.
Israeli forces raided the Kamal Adwan Hospital, one of only three medical facilities on the northern edge of the Gaza Strip on Friday, ordering dozens of patients and hundreds of others to evacuate the compound, officials said. The Palestinian Health Ministry said contact with staff inside the facility, which has been under heavy pressure from Israeli forces for weeks, had been lost. According to medics, in separate incidents across to Gaza, Israeli strikes killed at least 25 people on Friday. Ukraine's military intelligence says North Korean troops are suffering heavy losses in Russia's Kursk region and face logistical difficulties as a result of Ukrainian attacks. VOA's Tommy McNeil reports.
The intelligence agency said that Ukrainian strikes inflicted heavy casualties on North Korean units. Ukraine's president said earlier this week that 3,000 North Korean troops have been killed and wounded in the fighting in the Kursk region. It marked the first significant estimate by Ukraine of North Korean casualties several weeks after Kyiv announced that North Korea had sent 10,000 to 12,000 troops to Russia to help it in the almost three-year war. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Of course, when a ship drags anchors along the seabed long way, it can't go unnoticed.
Estonian Justice Minister Liisa Pakosta said maritime law has to be changed to protect undersea infrastructure after cables connecting it to Finland were again damaged this week.
The situation that is now at the Baltic Sea, where the anchors have been dropping several times in a row, it can't be by accident.
Finnish authorities on Thursday seized a ship carrying Russian oil in the Baltic Sea on suspicion it caused the outage of an undersea power cable connecting Finland in Estonia a day earlier, and that it also damaged or broke four internet lines. Peru's government on Thursday declared an environmental emergency in a northern coastal area where state oil firm PetroPeru last weekend spilled a crude oil shipment into surrounding waters of the Pacific Ocean. That wraps up this update, but the world of news never stops. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Christina Menenti, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is yet another sign that the Nigerian military has not changed and they have not learned a lesson from previous attacks or airstrikes that kill civilians.
That was Issa Sanusi, Amnesty International's country director in Nigeria, on a military airstrike that killed at least 10 civilians. Details coming up. Also, tensions are mounting in Chad ahead of elections on Sunday. And Namibia has opened a criminal case against China's Xinfeng Investments for alleged illegal mining of lithium. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with a top story. Nigerian authorities in northwest Sokoto State have launched a probe into an airstrike by the military that killed at least 10 people this week. The military has denied targeting civilians during the operation, saying it was going after a new militant sect. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
According to a statement Thursday, Sokoto State Governor Ahmed Aliyu says he's in talks with the Nigerian Army to ensure a thorough investigation into the circumstances that led to the airstrike. Early Wednesday, the military launched an airstrike it said targeted the terror group Lakurawa in the villages of Gidan, Sama, and Rumtuwa. But Governor Aliyu said the attack, quote, claimed the lives of innocent citizens, end quote. State authorities said 10 people were killed and many others injured. Aliyu extended his condolences to the affected families and pledged to support them with cash and food items. The incident is the latest in a series of accidental strikes in recent years, raising concerns among human rights groups, including Amnesty International. Issa Sanusi is Amnesty's country director in Nigeria.
This is yet another sign that the Nigerian military has not changed and they have not learned a lesson from previous attacks or airstrikes that kill civilians. I believe that they have to review their procedures. They have to investigate this incident thoroughly. And they have to find a way to end this reckless, deadly use of force. Within the space of just 1 or 2 years, at least 3 major incidents have happened.
The military said in a statement Wednesday that it did not target civilians and that it took necessary measures to avoid such accidents. The Nigerian Air Force says it will investigate the casualties. Nigeria has been waging deadly wars against terrorists, armed gangs, and separatists for years, but accidents have been recurring. Last December, a military airstrike that hit Tundumbiri village in northern Kaduna State killed more than 120 people. And in September, another airstrike in Kaduna killed 24 people. Nigerian authorities have promised to be more courteous, but in a Christmas Day broadcast, the Nigerian Air Staff Chief Hassan Abubakar had this to say.
To every member of the Nigerian Air Force family, I want to especially thank you for your unwavering dedication, resilience, and sacrifice in service of our great nation. Your commitment and professionalism have been instrumental in ensuring the security and stability of our beloved country.
In November, Nigerian authorities announced the emergence of the Lakurawa sect in the northwest and said security forces were already tracking the group's activities. Nigerians are hopeful this is the last time an airstrike will hit civilians instead of militants, but many dread a repeat of the tragedy seen on Christmas Day. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Tensions continue to mount in Chad with opposition and civil society groups vowing to disrupt Sunday's local council, regional and parliamentary elections. The groups say the polls will be rigged to favor current President Mahamata Idris Deby and they are visiting towns and villages warning people to stay home to avoid possible street violence. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé in neighboring Cameroon.
Chadens in the country's capital, N'Djamena, say uncertainty looms in the Central African state ahead of elections slated to take place Sunday. 23-year-old Limana Abba, a student at the University of N'Djamena, told VOA via a messaging app Friday that opponents of the elections have been visiting neighborhoods to warn people against voting. He says he is not sure he and a majority of registered voters will be able to vote because opposition and civil society groups have increased threats to attack those who vote on Sunday. In Chad, civil society groups are associations authorized to help with the country's governance, human rights, and democratic process. It's not clear if the groups threatening violence Sunday qualify as civil society under that definition. In any case, Limana has concerns about whether the military and police can protect voters, candidates, and election officials, despite pledges from the government to do so. Chadian officials told state TV this week that government troops and police have been deployed to safeguard civilians and their property and to stop what the government calls the possible use of weapons by disgruntled civilians. Ahead of the vote, political parties and aligned groups have been holding daily campaigns against the elections. Sumain Adum, the spokesperson of Waki Tamba, a coalition of over 100 groups, spoke to a press conference in N'Djamena Thursday. He says civilians do not trust Deby, who wants to continue his father Idris Deby Idno's roughly 30-year rule at all costs. He says all Chadens should stay at home on Sunday as a sign of protest against the armed conflicts, corruption, abuses of press freedom, suffocation of liberties and democracy, and illegal arrest and detention of opposition and civil society members that have characterized Deby's rule. Suman said the elections management body, ANGE, cannot claim the elections will be free, fair, and credible when Deby is preparing to use government troops to stuff ballot boxes as he did during the Central African State's May 6 presidential elections. Deby and ANGE denied the presidential election was rigged, and ANGE has always claimed it organizes free, fair, and transparent elections free of government intervention. The elections managing body is asking civilians to brave the threats and contribute to the country's development by taking part in Sunday's polls. Scores of opposition and civil society members have been arrested ahead of the polls. Government officials say police called in several dozen people for questioning this week because of complaints from Deby's ruling Patriotic Salvation Movement that their campaign teams were attacked and election materials destroyed. Sunday's local, regional, and parliamentary elections were organized to mark an end to Chad's 3-year transition period after the death of longtime President Idris Deby Itno in April 2021. The legislative elections are aimed at restoring the 188-member National Assembly that was dissolved in April 2021 when the army took power. Officials say government troops will vote Saturday before the general voting, then be on alert to intervene in case of violence when civilians vote Sunday. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaounde, Cameroon.
Namibia's Ministry of Mines and Energy Commissioner has opened a criminal case against Shane Fang Investments for alleged illegal mining of lithium in the area of Uis in the country's northwest. Vitalio Angula has this report from Windhoek.
China's Xinfeng Investments has been in the news for years over allegations of bribery of government officials to gain access to lithium mining claims and illegal mining and transportation of lithium ore without the necessary permits. Lately, the company was again found to have mined illegally in an area for which it did not have permission. This forced the Commissioner of Mines in Namibia, Isabel Churcher, to open a criminal case against the company. Ministry spokesperson Anna Salkeus says public concern, media reports, and red flags raised by activists over the destruction of ancestral graves by Xinfeng prompted the mining commissioner to make an unannounced visit. She confirmed the irregularities that have irked activists in the Uyghur community.
The team discovered and confirmed the prevalence of mining activities at a site where only exploration operations were authorized. In response to this finding, the ministry, through the Office of the Mining Commissioner, directed for immediate cessation of all mining operations by the company.
Xinfeng was summoned to the Ministry of Mines for a hearing on the 5th and 6th December, where the company admitted to wrongdoing. The company says in a letter to the mining commissioner that it has invested $44 million in its Namibian operations, and seizing the mining operations has forced the company to send its 180 personnel home. In its defense, the company says it has been waiting 6 months for a mining license, and lithium prices globally have declined. A letter by Xinfeng director Xi Yiming, addressed to the mining commissioner, says, "This long and unexplained delay makes investment decisions difficult and uncompetitive, especially when considering the underperformance of the lithium market." The letter adds that threats of trade rule changes make the sector high-risk investment, and because the sector is dependent on volumes, unresponsive regulatory regimes are not helpful. Kuve Kangwehi handles public relations on behalf of Xinfeng. He says the company has halted mining but needs to investigate in-house and understand the charges against it. He further blamed Xinfeng's troubles on xenophobia and community infights at the settlement of Uyghurs.
Namibians have a certain attitude in which we treat Chinese people or Chinese investors, and the different way that we choose what we treat European descent investors. So there are also some local squabblings taking place within the communities, local power battles taking place within the Uyghur community, and they are using this Xinfeng thing as one of the reasons to criticize one another or to score political points or whatever that means. So Xinfeng is also, of course, finds itself in a local political battle within the Uyghur community itself.
Community activist Jimmy Avaseb has published an open letter to the president and other stakeholders on remedial action to be taken against Xinfeng. He accuses the company of damaging the environment and displacing small-scale miners. Avaseb is seeking repatriation of stolen ore from the mine and confiscation of their equipment. He also accuses local traditional authorities of not having the best interests of the mining community at heart when they allow mining companies to begin activities on their land. He also accuses local traditional authorities of not having the best interests of the community at heart when they allow mining companies to begin activities on their land.
As community, and for me as a community activist, it is for us to assure that due processes are being followed by mining companies that come into our area, and most specifically in the country at large as well. There seems to be a norm that has developed that there are individuals in various ministries that are unpatriotic to the country, that they allow and give permission for companies to come and mine without following due processes.
VOA has previously reported on Xinfeng and how the company's dealings have irritated local communities. The company has been able to shake off those accusations. For VOA News, I am Vitalio Angula in Windhoek, Namibia.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yehia Suhib, in Washington. The promised effort by President-elect Donald Trump to remake the U.S. government is set to encompass one of the country's premier law enforcement and intelligence agencies. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Seldon reports on Trump's choice to lead and reform the FBI.
It's an announcement that took many by surprise. FBI Director Christopher Wray telling employees he'll step down when President-elect Donald Trump takes office.
This is the best way to avoid dragging the Bureau deeper into the fray.
And he shared some final orders.
What absolutely, positively cannot, must not change is our commitment to doing the right thing in the right way every time.
But change is coming.
Meetings went wonderful.
Kash Patel, picked by Trump to lead the FBI even before Wray announced plans to cut his 10-year term short, meeting with lawmakers and making his case for confirmation. The 44-year-old Patel is a former public defender and federal prosecutor who served as a national security advisor and at the Pentagon during Trump's first term. John Fortier with the American Enterprise Institute, a think tank in Washington.
I think what really makes him attractive to Trump is, again, that he saw what he thought and that the President Trump thought were abuses of the Justice Department, the FBI in particular, going out, perhaps investigating where they shouldn't have.
Something Patel has been willing to say out loud.
I am honored to be here in support of Donald J. Trump. He is being victimized, but we as a country are being victimized even more by the unconstitutional weaponization of justice.
Patel's wild opponents, by saying he would shut down the Bureau's headquarters in Washington, reduce the FBI's surveillance powers, and cut the size of the Bureau's intelligence operations. He's also called for annihilating the deep state. And in his 2023 book, Government Gangsters, listed 60 officials who have disagreed with Trump. Again, AEI's John Fortier.
Some of the changes that he might want to make, he can do it with tone or with some changes in personnel. But if he really does want to make these significant changes, that's going to take, you know, more work from the executive and the legislative branch, something that takes a little longer that he can't do all by himself.
Kash Patel, according to Trump, is the man to at least get it started. Jeff Seldon, VOA News, Washington.
Now for all our listeners preparing for the holiday season and the new year, we have some greetings from Accra, Ghana, brought to us by journalist James Shimanyula. First is Nixon Mwamba.
I'm happy that we've reached the end of the year. We and Voice of America, we've been friends every day in the morning, afternoon, and evening. It's been our news center. I wish you a Merry Christmas and a happy and a prosperous year 2025. If I had a dream to share with Voice of America, I would have told them that it would have been better if they increased the coverage in the entire continent, that is Africa, because most of everything that we hear from Voice of America is educative or is something that will happen. Africa will best share the knowledge that Voice of America will be giving them in the days to come.
And we wrap up with Safarani Kaliba.
I hope you all at Voice of America will have merry, bright and cheerful Christmas, and I wish you happy new year full of joy and blessings. You all at Voice of America and listeners around the world, happiness ahead of the new year. My wish is that 2025 should inspire Voice of America to rise. Warm wishes to you all at Voice of America.
For all our listeners, we at VOA wish you a peaceful, prosperous 2025.
And in our sports wrap-up, we have sports analyst Mokbilia Barrow. Thank you for being with us on the show, Mokbil.
Thank you for having me, Hayes.
So in the world of baseball, Shohei Ohtani wins AP Male Athlete of the Year for a third time, tying Michael Jordan. What does that mean for the Japanese superstar?
It's a good question. Ohtani has shown us really the level and reach by where the game of baseball has gotten to. Japan is one of the premier countries when it comes to baseball as well. So having a megastar of that caliber playing for the Los Angeles Dodgers, the champions and championship caliber, it really, what it does is it just globalizes the game further. As you mentioned, he won the AP Mail award three times, tying Michael Jordan. The record is four, actually. So he's one shy from tying Lance Armstrong, Tiger Woods, and LeBron James. So he's already in elite company, but he's trying to go for that next level.
Interesting. And switching over to football, the English Premier League had some games yesterday. What games can change the landscape of the top of the table?
Absolutely. If we're going to talk about it, the rise and fall of Manchester City, they continually keep taking this slump downwards. We're supposed to get a win against Everton, but unfortunately we're unable to, and they did a late draw. So that they ended that game 1-1. Liverpool comfortably comes from behind against Leicester City. That went up 1-0, and Liverpool ends it off 3-1. They are currently at the top. They are ahead of Chelsea because Chelsea dropped some points to Fulham. They were leading the game up until the 80th minute or around there, and Fulham scores two goals very late to give them the upset at Chelsea's home, Stamford Bridge. So Arsenal are playing today against Ipswich Town. If they get the win, they'll be within 6 points of Liverpool. Liverpool still have a game at hand. If Arsenal lose this game, that means they could be from the top potentially about 12 points. That's very difficult to come back from.
And Mukbir, former Manchester United player Diego Forlán is set to make his professional tennis debut. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Diego retired from the game of football in 2019. He is currently 45 years old, and he is currently going to be playing doubles alongside the world number 101, Federico Coria, in a Uruguayan Open. So he's from Uruguay, so this will be very interesting to see what he does. It's almost like his second chapter, you know, if you will. He has always loved tennis from what he has mentioned, and it'll be interesting to see what he does in the beautiful game of tennis.
Mukbir Yabaro, our sports analyst, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA. VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhaib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Pete Hundley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.